The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome to Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Howard. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hell yeah.
You got any news for us this evening, Kara?
Oh, no. I'm not doing that anymore.
Well, then
you can go home. Yeah, okay. No, I have news. Don't send me away.
All right.
What you got? Is all I have. Okay. A short video published last week by U.S. Marine Corps veteran Miles Panosh describes a UFO sighting over a Lake Michigan nuclear power station in March. The video appears to depict a massive triangular craft floating through the air above the Point Beach nuclear plant. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange was arrested Thursday in London after a 7-year stay in the Ecuadorian embassy. In 2010, Assange began publishing diplomatic secrets with the help of American intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning. Recently, Assange has come under fire for his role in releasing thousands of hacked Democratic emails, but he is currently only facing legal trouble for, quote, conspiring to commit unlawful computer intrusion based on his agreement with Ms. Manning. The Chinese government has created an AI to track Uyghurs, a predominantly Muslim Chinese minority group. The algorithm is designed to identify Uyghur racial attributes and has been criticized for essentially being a racial profiling machine. Although people have long considered that such algorithms merely automate human bias, China seems to be explicitly attempting to do just that, using technology to track and control a specific racial group. This comes after years of reports that China has detained about 1 million Uyghurs in Chinese indoctrination camps designed to, quote, curb extremism. And, of course, last week humanity took a great step forward when astronomers released the first image of a black hole. And because we can't have nice things, men's rights activists, incels, and pickup artists are claiming that the black hole photo was faked in order to make computer scientist Katie Bowman, who compiled the images, look good. Others in the same group claimed that Bowman was actually minimally responsible for creating the code, pointing to other members of the team instead. Despite fellow scientists taking to Twitter to set the sexists straight, such conspiracy theories are likely to continue. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right. You know, this seems so that the Marine sighting, was that a government video or was he a Marine that took the video?
He was a former Marine.
So the video was taken post.
Right. He was just a private citizen.
I see.
But he was at one point a Marine. Which
Not that I'm negating it because of that. I just, you know, there's been so much release of.
Right.
Government stuff.
No, you're right.
Yeah, that I was making the connection, you know, maybe jump into conclusions there. I got to say, Julian Assange.
Mm-hmm. Polarizing figure.
I've always thought this guy was shady. I mean,
I don't know.
I can't find a hero in somebody who. Okay, this guy got kicked out of the Ecuadorian embassy because he was a jerk.
That is true.
He didn't get kicked out for anything else. He got kicked out for basically not only looking like, but living like Trevor Slattery from the third
Iron Man movie.
Iron Man movie. Yeah. So he like looks like the Mandarin, the actor that played the Mandarin. And apparently he lived in squalor. There was like fecal stuff on the walls. It's like just nasty, absolutely nasty.
Right.
And the Ecuadorians are all like, this guy's that. So how are we supposed to take this guy seriously?
That's true. He is kind of like the Swamp Witch version of Edward Snowden.
Yeah,
still.
Totally. Yeah, Snowden, he had a haircut. You know, there's something about a haircut, you know. When you go to court, nobody's just, well, you know, I'm going to grow out my hermit beard for court.
I'm glad this is the level our discourse is on. It's like, well, he had a businessman cut. He seems fine in my opinion.
Right, totally. Well, I mean, you know, it's true. All right,
I don't know. I have mixed feelings on him.
I do, too. I don't know. You know, it's like, I do think that our government's lying to us, but I also,
right,
I don't trust multimillionaires either.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of my thing.
I don't see how we landed in this world where we're all the government's out to get us. Let's put our faith in corporate executives. It's like, no, yeah, they're out to get you too. The reason why your government is out to get you is because they're in the pocket of corporate executives. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I appreciate him being whistleblower, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I can tell you, I am not going to blow that whistle after him because he is gross.
Well, yeah, get a different whistle. But,
yeah.
Okay, I guess technically Chelsea Manning is the one who was the whistleblower.
She's clean, you know.
Yeah, she's fine.
She's clean. Yeah.
She's in prison.
I mean, physically clean.
Right.
You know, clean as far as, like, legally, probably not.
No fecal material on right. the walls.
Yes, exactly. The Chinese, you know, building the world's first racist computer.
I mean, far from the first racist computer, but they did it on purpose.
No, I don't know. We are right on the cusp of true AI. So this is
right.
the world's first computer, the world's first artificially, truly sentient computer might be a raging racist because it was made that way.
Yeah, that's quite possible. That's something people are worried about. So this isn't the first kind of system that's like designed to track suspects or whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of these systems have had this issue where it's like, we weren't trying to design it that way, but, you know, just based on the data
we that.
Had.
Right, of course. Your biases go into everything, you know.
It's exactly.
Like, now we're going to have to build a, like, white nationalist computer to, like, go against the Chinese racist computer.
Exactly.
They can duke it out in, like, war games or whatever, you know, and
but,
play a game.
But China was like, this computer is going to repress this racial group. And it's like, no, that's exactly what we want. Turn it on.
Right, yeah, totally, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
like, China... As far as, like, Chinese Muslims are concerned, they have really not been cool in the last decade.
Well, I mean, the Hatebot 2000 seems like it's going to take care of it. But, okay, so this is a question that I got for you. So I have heard a lot about the Chinese, you know, coming down on their Muslim population.
Yeah.
And, you know, on a safety level, I mean, I don't get it, but I mean, I understand what's going on. We live in a world and we're trying to be concerned about that. But when I hear about terror attacks and stuff like that, I don't know if I've ever heard of one in China.
Well, there have
been.
Do
they happen?
There have been extremist attacks in China. It's a huge country. We don't even hear about a lot of stuff that goes on there because people, frankly, aren't really that interested.
Right. I see. Yeah.
But, yeah, there have been terrorist attacks, but, like, there's about 11 million Uyghurs in China. They've put about 1 million in concentration camps, essentially. Mm. That strikes me as an overreaction. Like, they're, you know, putting women and children in camps where they're educated not to be their religion just because.
Yeah. But this
it's
country,
not great.
China is not exactly the good guys.
No.
I mean,
no.
They did build the hate. They did build the hate.
They
bot
did
2000,
build the hate
you know.
Bot. Yeah, I'm critical of like a lot of countries. I'm very critical of the U.S., but like it's hard to do worse than China, man.
Yeah, unfortunately, when you get groups of people together, you know, they get scared. I got to move on before we get to the end here. First black hole photo ever fake, whatever. Those people can go to HE double hockey sticks. Space is important to me. I was really upset that this came on the news and it was considered like the last story at the end of the list at the end of the evening. And I'm just all great. One of the greatest steps in human technology. And they're just all, and
really
we got a black
cool.
hole off to commercial, you know, and I'm just all great. You know, that's the world we live in. All right. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. When we come back, we have our guest, Lawton Anderson, better known in the real world as Stacey Galloway. She is the author of. Let's get the book title, The Dyatlov Pass Incident. You want to know what that is? Well, you better come back.
Under blue moon I saw you. So soon you'll take me. Up in your arms too late to beg you. Or cancel it though I know it must be.
Come on, let's sit down together. I could stay here forever. Friendly smiles, family and friends, plates piled high with happiness. Black bear time, it feels like home to me. Can't explain it, you just have to see. Hey, hey, black bear feels like home.
Mako is back with another great deal giving your car that shiny new Mako makeover. They're having a tax time special. Get 33% off a standard paint package. Bring your tax refund to Mako and make that faded, scratched, and weathered paint job look great again at affordable prices. Get quality, quick turnaround times, and all work is backed by the National Mako Warranty. Mako accepts all insurance and offers financing OAC with interest-free loans for up to a year. Come in today for a free estimate. Mako, America's Body Shop, on Crossroads Drive or MakoReading.com. Uh-oh, better get Mako.
Hot Car
and Cool April Night
is back April 20th through the 28th.
Over a week of classic fun.
So dust off your lawn chairs for the big cruise on Friday, April 26th, and get your tickets now for the main event with over 2,000 classic cars on display Saturday, April 27th.
So get your car registered today.
Discount advance tickets are available at all Napa Auto Parts stores. Avoid the lines and buy yours now. Don't miss the 30th annual Cool April Nights, April 20th through April 28th.
Oh, baby, Cool April Nights is coming. For more information, go to CoolAprilNights.com. That's CoolAprilNights.com. Cool April Nights is sponsored in part by Wind River Resort and Casino, Visit Redding, Marquis Shasta, Block Beverage, Napa Auto Parts, Action News, Redding McDonald's, and this radio station.
As gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearms specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts, with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard-to-find ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years' experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane of Wall Street in Reading. Join the revolution.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
All right. Welcome back to Radio Wasteland. And our guest, her pseudonym is Lawton Anderson, that she writes nonfiction under, but her real name, Stacey Galloway, and we're going to talk about the Dyatlov Pass incident. I have to look at the word every time I say it out loud, and she's going to help us understand what that's all about. Stacey, do you have there? Are you there with us?
I am. Hi. How are you?
Oh, good, good. You know, normally I start by asking people how they got interested in this, but, you know, we're going to come to that later, because I think a lot of people just maybe don't even know what this is. So can you give us a really basic rundown of what this situation is, and then we'll dig into it a little further?
Sure. This happened in Russia in 1959 during what they call, or what would have been called, a winter hike at the time. And nine young people, ranging in age from 21, actually all in their 20s except one was 37, went on a winter hike. This entailed walking in skis, basically. So rather than hiking on foot, they were walking on skis through the Siberian mountains, and they never came back. So, excuse me, search parties were sent out and found the tent first. The tent itself looked orderly, aside from the fact that it was collapsed, but, you know, from winds or whatever. But after the searchers lifted the tent and, you know, kind of pried it off the frozen ground, There were slashes, knife slashes on the side of the tent. Mm-hmm. And that raised some concern. But the inside of the tent, the shoes were in piles, the clothes were in piles, the money was all there, their passports were all there, but the nine hikers weren't there. Well, what ended up happening is they started finding their bodies up to a mile away, but not all nine bodies were together. One was a half mile from the tent, one was three quarters of a mile. The rest were roughly about a mile, but not all in the same places. One was buried in the snow. Two were found near the remains of a campfire, but they didn't have their clothes, like their outer clothes on. They were down in, you know, their long johns and stuff like that, all frozen, all dead. The last four were found, and that really is what kind of brings the Dyatlov mystery. The whole thing is mysterious from, you know, the tent, the condition of the tent. It's collapsed. Things look orderly inside. Nothing's crushed or anything, but there's slashes on the side of the tent. And now we've got the bodies up to about a mile away.
Right.
And those last four bodies, two of them had crushed ribs. Two of them were missing their eyes completely, even the skin around their eyes. One of them had a broken neck, and those injuries were I don't even want to say the most unusual, but finding those last four bodies kind of, like I said, came into the whole pinnacle of the mystery itself. So now you have nine very able hikers. They've all been on these long winter hikes before. They've endured different hardships. One had been bitten by a snake during a previous hike and came back and healed up, and she went out again. Another had been accidentally shot by a hunter, and again she healed and came back. The oldest of the group, the 37-year-old, was a World War II veteran. He had survived the war, had all sorts of decorations. And in fact, there's an interesting fact along with that, him, is that only 3% of the men born the year he was born, 1921, that served in World War II, only 3% were still alive. And he was one of those 3%.
At 37.
97% had perished in the war. So it kind of sets the stage for his abilities as well.
Right. Why were they on the winter hike? Is this a government thing or a school thing, or is this like a vacation thing?
Exactly. It was a combination. It was a hike that was sponsored through a university that half of them were still students in the university. The others were alumni, and then the 37-year-old, his name's Simon, he was actually applying to be an instructor there. So the university sponsored the hike, and they provided the quite a bit of the supplies, although the students and alumni brought their supplies also. But the government itself at the time, now this is during the Cold War, the government of Russia liked to encourage athleticism, and they, you know, kept an eye on that. They were looking for the best athletes, and the best either pull them in for their own, the Olympics, or for further training, you know, in athleticism, or even for maybe military type duties. I mean,
I've seen Rocky IV. I know what they were doing. You know,
I'm sorry?
I said I've seen Rocky IV. I know what they were doing.
They were and
you know,
it really
trying to get
to
all and train all the bad guys.
Yeah, and you know, that era was just fascinating. I mean, Russia really had a, you know, hand grip on its citizens. It was even these hikes themselves, although coordinated through the university and authorized through the government. The Russian government itself didn't allow citizens to have maps. Now, people could, you know, draw maps. I suppose you could buy maps, you know, on the black market or whatever. but only official military, Russian officials themselves could actually legally own a map. So the saying back then was, if you didn't, well, one, you couldn't have a map, but if you didn't know where you were going, then you weren't supposed to be going there. So these hikes, although, like I said, sponsored through the university and then encouraged through the government, they didn't, you know, the government didn't take that extra step with, like, okay, here's an official map of the area. A lot of these students would, you know, pass maps back and forth. In fact, it was somebody's job along the hike to kind of sketch and map out where they were.
Sure.
And stuff like that. So,
as far as we know, they weren't there for any sort of scientific reason. They were just there purely recreationally in athleticism.
It really was. It really was. Now, they belonged to a hiking club at the university itself, and the hiking club had three tiers of hikes that they would allow the students to go on, with a Category 1 being the easiest, a Category 2 being kind of medium, and then Category 3 being this extreme one. Where, now the point of a Category 3, which is what this hike was classified as, one, several of them were qualifying for this Category 3, but several of them had already done these. I'd say it was probably about half. In fact, there were only two. Well, there were two that really weren't up at the Category 3 level yet. They were approved to go. All this had to be run through the university and ultimately the government. They were approved. So the point of the Category 3 hike itself is, one, they're going on skis, you know, so they're basically like ski walking or skiing, you know, across all this terrain. Snow's 12 foot deep. It's January. I mean, it's negative 30 degrees at night. It's just really, really harsh conditions. The other expectation with a Category 3 is no form of communication. They weren't allowed to bring, like, a radio to communicate back and forth. I mean, they were pretty far out there anyway, so there wouldn't have been a lot of people to communicate with. But even, you know, some sort of a radio for emergencies and stuff like that. But the other expectation is they would be carrying all their supplies themselves. There were no sleds. They weren't pulling sleds. This was all the tent, the food, any equipment. Everything was carried in backpacks on their backs.
We don't have too long until a commercial. We got about 2 minutes here until the break. But when we found them, were they lost or were they on the path that we expected them to be on?
I realized there was about a
mile radius that they were either running or separated or whatever. But were they close to where we expected them to be?
The tent itself wasn't on the official course that they had submitted for their itinerary. There's a lot of folks that are much more expert at the map thing than, and I'm in awe of the folks that have looked at that, that say that some of the deviations could have come from some landmarks. They could have chosen to go the particular route they went for some reason. So that finding the tent itself took a few days. You know, I mean, airplane searches, kind of looking for tracks. The bodies themselves, it really didn't make sense for where the bodies were. They were in a straight line from the tent, but they were not like back on the trail they had just come from or anything. They were just kind of straight down the slope where the tent was, down the slope and then up a 15-foot cliff. So they had to climb this cliff and then the bodies. And that was the furthest bodies, those last four. And then from that furthest point, all the way back to the tent was almost like a straight line of bodies. And
let me cut you off there. We're about to come up on break here, but I got to say that straight line really brings to a lot more questions to mind here. But we're going to break here. You're listening to Stacey Galloway here on Radio Wasteland. We're talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident. And if you don't find this interesting, you might have the wrong show. Come on back.
It was back in 32 when times were hard. He had a Colt 45 and a deck of cards. He wore rags on shoes and an old Stetson hat. Had a 2840, had payments on that. Stay. His one true amount on the ice and the snow. When she told him never, ever come back.
After the fires, the odds are that your HVAC system is now loaded with ash and contamination that will fill your house every time you start your heating system in the weeks ahead. Now's the time to get that ductwork cleaned and sanitized for your family's health. For more than a quarter century, Clean Air Duct Cleaning has been giving homeowners peace of mind every time their system comes on. Right now, Chris is offering up to 12 vents cleaned for $250. Get all the details at 356-4435. That's 356-4435.
Shasta Regional Medical Center is located in the heart of downtown Reading and was the recipient of the 2017 HealthGrades Patient Safety and Excellence Award. Our hospital is committed to always providing exceptional care and performance as a certified chest pain center, certified primary stroke center, and most recently earning the Joint Commission's Gold Seal of Approval for hip and knee replacement. When it comes to quality, compassion, and community, Shasta Regional Medical Center is the community choice.
Ready to make more money, break more ground, and achieve more of your life's goals? With free tuition at Shasta College, now is your chance to get more out of life. We all know that education is the key to a bigger paycheck and a brighter future, and Shasta College is committed to providing the best in affordable, accessible higher education that opens more doors. Whether you're looking to transfer to a bachelor's degree program, complete a professional degree, or secure a certification in a high-demand field, there's never been a better time to start demanding more. Shasta College grads are building more businesses, saving more lives, and attending more four-year universities. And with more programs and classes to choose from, what more could you ask for? Well, since you asked, if you're a first-time full-time student, the Shasta Promise Program will cover your entire tuition for the first year. That's right, your Shasta College tuition is free. A new semester starts soon. Enroll now before the class time you want is gone. Start getting more out of your future today. Visit shastacollege.edu/apply or call 530-242-7500 to enroll now. Shasta College, more possibilities.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. I want to share some thoughts from local 53-year teaching icon Phyllis Hutchinson about her experience living here at River Commons.
Absolutely fell in love with everything about the facilities here. The kitchen crew is awesome. The meals are wonderful. I find it interesting as I look around the dining room how every table seems pleasantly happy. I mean, they're not just sitting there eating. There's conversation. I mean, everybody here, everyone that works here has treated me like I am special. I mean, it's just amazing.
Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and ask me how you can have us pay for your move or how you can save $1,000 when you move in. River Commons Senior Living, 301 Hartnell Avenue, or check out our website at river-commons.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460.
Back to Radio Wasteland. We're talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident with our guest, Stacy Galloway. You know, as you were talking about this, you know, there is a trail, a straight line. This is, I actually have it here in my, I take notes as you talk, with questions that I may want to ask, and that was
Chauncey's
one of them.
A good student.
I am a good student. You know, the straight line implies to me that they ran as a group from something and were picked off one by one, because why would they all go in a straight line and die along the way? So really what I want to cover in this segment is, what do we think happened? You know, surely there's at least one theory, but I'm guessing there are several.
There really are, and there really are a lot of theories. So if we look at what we know, and one of the things is I've already mentioned, the tent itself is, you know, in good shape but collapsed but with splash marks. So as folks look at that and that straight line, it kind of reads like a story. Oh, they splashed their way out of the tent. They ran a mile down the mountain, and something killed them one by one, or they all ended up as a group a mile away and started trying to come back. So that's kind of the story it tells. But if we look at what we have, which are, well, unfortunately, the bodies themselves and the injuries, or even before we even get to the injuries, if we look at the bodies themselves, they weren't wearing shoes. So, nor their coats, that, you know, we'll focus on the shoes for just a second. So we're talking about negative 30 degree weather, nighttime, and a mile. Now, in a diary entry just prior to this happening, the group had written down that they were making about a mile an hour progress. Now, this is on their skis, completely garbed out. Of course, they've got their backpacks on, but that's the type of progress they were making. Now, so if we look at that, and we're looking at their barefoot or in their socks, and they're a mile away, did they willingly walk or run a mile from their tent in their bare feet? I mean, you really have to think about what type of fear or what type of thing would send you pell-mell to really your death barefoot in the snow in negative 30 degree weather and then be up to a mile away. Something happened. Something happened in that tent. And now when we look at the tent, like I said, it's orderly. The only sign of disorder are the slashes. So this wasn't a group drug hallucination. That's one thing that comes up. You know, they decided to try drugs out in the Siberian wilderness this one night, and they freaked out. You know, nothing really accounts for it. We're talking about nine very experienced, at least in this situation, hikers who are going to leave their only form of shelter, barefoot, not dressed appropriately, and walk an hour away. So the theories, one of the big theory, and in fact, the one that the most prevailing theory is avalanche. You know, an avalanche ran over the tent, and, you know, of course they would have had to leave at that point. They have no more shelter. But I've said it probably way too many times at this point, but things weren't crushed in the tent. The crackers weren't crushed. Right. There was a cup of cocoa still sitting there, frozen, but still sitting there. A sandwich. I mean, there was just no sign of this chaotic craziness happening in the tent. So whatever happened, you know, that drove them out of the tent wasn't something like that, avalanche. Another interesting one, people come up with this ice slab. An ice slab came rushing down the mountain and crushed them and hurt them. Again, we have to account for them being a mile away, barefoot, not dressed appropriately for the weather. Of course, when their bodies were found, they had frostbite, you know, on all their limbs, and there's still no shoes or anything.
Right, and that snow would still be there. They would be buried. I mean, it's not like the snow. I mean, I get the concept. Okay, so here's this avalanche. Here's this ice slide or something, and maybe they're in the tent. They hear the crash. They hear the bang. They get out of there as soon as possible so they can see. They're not really dressed, but they're just, oh, okay, what's this crazy bang? And while out there missing the tent, maybe they get swept away. But evidence of that would still be there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Crushed trees, something. I mean, the folks that found them were able-bodied outdoorsmen also. Some were lifelong outdoorsmen, hunters, people from the village. There were, and that's one thing, you know, when we look at the situation, we're looking at the original investigative files, and to a T, they're all, you know, there's no sign of an avalanche. There's just no sign. There's no sign of this ice slab. The trees aren't crushed. There's nothing. Even another interesting one was a herd of animals, you know, trampled over them in the tent, a herd of deer or whatever be out there. But again, no sign of that. Now, their footprints were found outside the tent. One theory says they walked themselves in an orderly manner away from the tent like they were going to go make a bonfire somewhere. But it's not orderly. I do have those photos in my book, and it's kind of a chaotic scene. Now, unfortunately, forensic, technology wasn't around back then. Nobody really thought to take a bunch of photos, and when they did, they were using the actual cameras from the actual hikers themselves. So, that kind of adds to some of the confusion. But the footprints that we do have photos of outside the tent, it shows kind of a chaotic scene. There's a few handprints in there. There's really not a rhyme or reason. You don't see this straight line walking down. It kind of looks like a gathering. And interestingly enough, also, they found a lot of small items outside the tent, things that would have come out of pockets. And the hikers themselves, when they were found, the few that did have coats on, there wasn't anything in their pockets. But one had his gloves in his pocket, but they weren't on his hands. Go along with this is they had some abrasions around their forehead and their eyelids. Some of them had abrasions around their wrists. And this isn't even getting to the big injuries. Like one of them had a third-degree burn. Third-degree all up and down his leg. We've already talked about the crushed ribs, the missing eyes, the missing tongue.
What explains that? So was the tongue cut out or was it bitten out? Do we know?
Well, there. Unfortunately, that's another thing. The autopsies themselves don't actually go. He goes into a lot of detail with the clothes. I mean, he talks about things being buttoned, unbuttoned, and what color the clothes are. But when it came to that tongue, the coroner just said tongue and diaphragm of the mouth is missing. And what that means is the entire inside of her mouth was missing and the tongue all the way down to the hyoid bone, which is that little fragile bone in your neck that tends to get broken if you get strangled or choked or whatever. So
that kind of implies to me that it was eaten out. That kind of implies to me that something came along and maybe ate it post-mortem.
Right. And one thing I would like to bring up in this is for folks that, there are some folks that are familiar with the Diatlov Pass mystery. There are a lot of facts out there. But one thing, as I was researching it and I was looking at the original investigative files, one of the things that hasn't really come to the forefront that I did include in my book is what's called a histology report. They went and microscopically looked at these areas of injury. They looked at that tongue area, and what they were looking for is signs of cellular bleeding, which would mean it would have happened while she was alive. With that, there was no sign of cellular bleeding in that tongue area. So that does go to the theory that scavengers, something ate it. But her eyes were missing also. That showed signs of cellular bleeding. That means that her eyes were removed while she was alive.
Man, and this is like the greatest horror film, They actually made a horror film of it called The Devil's Pass, but
of course they did.
But it wasn't great. But man, this is like I'm a raging horror aficionado, and this story to me is just over the top, just intense. All right, Stacey, we're coming up on another break here. We're talking to Stacey Galloway about her book, The Diatlov Pass Incident. And man, this is absolutely terrifying. As I'm sitting here talking to Stacey, I'm watching Kara's face, and she has like this horrific look on her face this whole time because it's like, the handprint, as soon as you said about the handprint, she's just like, oh my gosh. All right, you're listening to Radio Wasteland with our guest, Stacey Galloway. Come on back.
Million guns are loaded. It takes honor. It takes courage. It takes commitment to serve in our armed forces and sacrifice for our freedom. Hi, I'm Rob Burrows from the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, reminding you how we can honor those sacrifices of our men and women. Come join us for the Northern California Veterans Museum annual dinner, banquet, and auction, Saturday, April 27th at the Veterans Event Center, 3210 West Center Street in Anderson. Enjoy a banquet dinner prepared by BC Stone Age Barbecue. Lots of drawings and auction items, including several firearms. All proceeds go straight to the funding of the Northern California Veterans Museum building project. For tickets and information, call 378-2280. That's 378-2280. Keep the date, Saturday, April 27th. We look forward to a great evening with you. Again, call 378-2280.
Shasta High's award-winning music department celebrates its 50th musical with the full theatrical production of The Little Mermaid, presented like Reading has never seen. All shows are at the beautiful David Marr Theater in Reading, May 2nd through the 4th and 9th through the 11th, featuring beloved songs such as Part of Your World, Under the Sea, Kiss the Girl, and many more. This classic tale with its heartwarming characters is one of the most celebrated Broadway musicals ever. For ticketing information or to see what they have planned as they celebrate 50 years of musical excellence, visit ShastaHighChoir.com.
Gather your friends and family to share a meal. Elements inside Wind River Resort and Casino is offering Easter brunch and dinner on Sunday, April 21st. Brunch 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. includes a carving station with prime rib, baked ham, crab, a waffle and omelet station. Assorted sides and desserts. Dinner buffet 5 to 9 p.m. includes prime rib, baked ham, and more sides and desserts. For full menus and prices, download the Wind River app. Children 5 and under free. Reservation suggested. Call 1-800-280-UWIN. Leave Easter brunch to us. Real people, real winners. You'll find all your favorite table games at Wind River Resort and Casino. Come and explore our exciting table games and see what California's premier gaming experience is all about. We'll make each gaming experience better than your last. Our friendly dealers provide premier gaming action 24 hours a day. More games, more ways to win, more fun at Wind River Resort and Casino. No one else in town offers this. For all the table games details, download the Wind River app. It's playtime all the time at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. We're talking to our guest, Stacey Galloway, about the Dyatlov Pass incident. You know, some of the sort of paranormal conspiracy explanations for this are potential infrasound testing, you know, causing panic attacks, military test, and
Yetis.
Yeah, there is actually one about the Discovery Channel in 2014 had a special called The Russian Yeti, The Killer Lives, that explored the theory of the Dyatlov group was killed by a Menk or Russian Yeti. You know, but I got to put it out there to you, Stacey. You wrote this book. What do you think happened?
Well, when it comes right down to it, when we look at the string of injuries, the unusualness of the tent itself, like I said, the abrasions on the eyelids, and all their injuries themselves start to tell a story. And, you know, we're looking at abrasions around their wrists, abrasions around their ankles. Again, small trinkets around the tent. It all points to somebody or a group of somebodies forced them out of that tent and took them away and caused their murders.
So you think it might be like, Russian yokels? You know, like wood people?
Well, interestingly enough, that's...
I don't know what to call them, you know? I mean, but yeah, so, you know, like crazy wrong turn, you know, mountain inbreds or something. I don't know.
Right. There was a there's a local native group that lives there called the Mansi, but they're a gentle, peaceful tribal people, kind of along the lines of, you know, just on the land. They've never done this type of thing before. So they were almost immediately ruled out. There is a local hunter. This is kind of an interesting twist to it. One of the last words in Zena's diary, one of the females, there were two females in the group. The last word in her diary was the name Rempel, R-E-M-P-E-L. And interestingly enough, he was one of the last people to talk to the group before they actually set off into the wilderness. Nobody knows what that conversation was about. The reason why we know that happened is because there was a 10th member of the group that turned back. He had a nerve condition. He didn't feel like he'd be able to complete that rigorous hike, so he turned back. He saw that conversation, but didn't think to ask, you know, what was that about. So that's kind of an interesting little thing. So if we're talking about murder, and really the pieces fit together for it, for that, the chest injuries could be somebody kneeling on their chest. We know the eyes were removed while they were alive.
Yeah,
the group didn't do it to each other.
Well, you know, that is one of the other, you know, as I've pointed out, I'm a horror movie fan. Have you ever seen Jacob's Ladder?
I haven't, and it's on my list, actually, on Netflix. It's either Netflix or Amazon, but
did you
no,
just spoil
I haven't.
It? Did they turn on each other?
Well, no, I didn't. I didn't spoil it. But, you know, there is these possibilities that, you know, well, I thought one of the... I think some of the government stuff, because we know that they were shady. We know that our government was shady at the time because we were in this Cold War. And we were doing a lot of shady things in order to try to get the upper hand in the name of security. And they were doing the same. And I wouldn't put it past them, especially with, you know, a lot of the descriptions that you've given of the way they support athleticism. They're looking for the best. I mean, it's very Nazi-esque, you know, sort of attitude towards their people as being a tool more so than their people. And you
only
know,
the strongest of you will make it through.
Right, yeah, totally. You know, it's like I wouldn't put it past some sort of military testing or testing of a tool or testing of a drug. You know, I mean, it is within the realm of possibility.
Right. And interestingly enough, after those last four bodies were found, which were the most horribly injured, the ones, like I said, with the missing eyes and the crushed ribs, the autopsies were done rather rapidly. The whole area was shut down for years and years after that. Now, this is an area that had been used by civilians, and this isn't the only hiking club out there. All the universities had their own hiking clubs, and there were several hiking clubs within that particular university, too. So the entire area was shut down. So it really does. It points to that the government knowing something. The files were classified up through the 90s, I believe. This is so many – I mean, for as big as this mystery is and as many people that were killed – or found dead, this isn't like a worldwide, it's still a new subject to a lot of people. The files were classified up until the 90s. A journalist actually wrote a book about it, and the rumors are he had to change some things in it. There's also a rumor that the entire file, although it says it's been, they say it's been released to the public now and unclassified, there's a lot of rumors that that's not actually the case. A lot of the photos with the official file that's been released, a lot of photos were actually loose in envelopes and don't belong to any particular camera film. There's people that have devoted years and years just to match these photos to whose camera they came out of.
Right.
And there's still photos that came out of the official file that were supposedly taken by the hikers themselves that don't fit in any particular roll of film that we have access to.
Right.
So it really does, everything you were saying, Chauncey, it just kind of looks, there's pieces missing. These pieces don't fit all together. And, you know, the government, especially back then, Cold War, nuclear arms race, this is, you know, a very, very different world.
Right.
And Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the show here. Before we finish this up, I definitely have to thank our engineer, Jared, for bringing this topic to light. You know, this was something that we had heard about, but Jared actually brought it up and said that we had to have it on the show. So thank you, Jared. Although, you know, he's in there watching otter videos, I think. And Stacey, how can people find out about this book, get a copy of your book, and find out more about you?
It's on Amazon. It's called Death of Nine, The Dyatlov Pass Mystery. It is published under Lawton Anderson. My name is Stacey Galloway. I use that pen name for this book. I write horror stories under Stacey Galloway myself. But I also have a website, StaceyGallowayAuthor.com. I'm also on Facebook, Stacey Galloway. And, but like I said, the book itself, it's out there on Amazon. It's free for Amazon Prime. It's in an ebook form. It's a beautiful print form too, but they're all, you know, the same book. And it's again, Death of Nine, The Dyatlov Pass Mystery. Lots of stuff in there. I've got the official autopsies. I've got that histology report I talked about with the, that talks about that wounds bled, so the missing eyes and stuff. I've got the illustrations of the injuries themselves, not to sound morbid, but just kind of an illustration showing where these different injuries were. There's a lot of information in that book that you're not going to find just out on the internet somewhere. I spent years and years and years pulling this all together. I wrote the book that I wish had existed when I started researching this, and I really, really hope it helps everybody, from the folks that, you know, just don't know a single thing about this mystery to the people that have read everything, and I think it'll benefit anybody who wants to know just a little bit more about it.
And it is interesting, and I wouldn't worry about the drawings. I have a feeling with this story, morbidity is par for the course.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stacey, thank you very much for coming on the show. This is a topic that we were very excited to have, and you definitely gave us all the backstory that we were missing, and I really appreciate it, and it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it, and you all have a very, very nice evening. Thank you.
You too. You've been listening to Stacey Galloway here on Radio Wasteland, talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident. You can find out more about her by looking up Stacey Galloway or Lawton Anderson, the pen name that she wrote the nonfiction under. Stacey Galloway is a horror fiction writer, so Lawton Anderson for the nonfiction. All right, thanks for checking us out, and check us out next week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.